Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Buddy graduate.
Plaster graduate.
Yep.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episodes are Season 7, Episodes 31 and 32, collectively known as Graduation Day. And now here are your graduates, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
As we go on, please remember. I don't actually remember the whole rest of that Vitamin C song. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
We're almost at the end of another season. Are you ready to graduate at last? Oh, God.
From season 7.
Yes, and I can't believe that after this, there's still 3 more, and 2 of them are supersized. We're going to be in our 50s when we're done with this podcast.
We're already in our 50s. Spoiler. Oh, just watching this 2-part finale was like, ooh, Einsteinian time bendage.
But the amazing thing is that, like, I don't think I took more notes. Like, it still is only 1 hour of story. I mean, and 1 hour of story of this show, which is like 23 minutes of story on any other show. I mean, we only have 17 clips. That's less than we have for some. That's less than we had for that retcon thing a few weeks ago. Those dicks.
That is really, like, there's just like extended sequences of like watching them process, watching them move their tassels, which did mean that they had graduated. We'll get into it. Watching everyone in their lives sit down. Like, we know how sitting down works. We don't need to see Mel doing it. We already saw him in this episode. No one cares.
It's true.
Super Philly.
Let's get into it. Yep. Starting with our C plot, Steve's priorities are typically disordered, and so is his relationship for the last time. So, about to graduate and without the cushy job he wrongly assumed he was going to get, Steve wants to pull off a senior prank and lies in wait in the Peach Pit After Dark parking lot to try to get David to help him. David is noncommittal and is apparently not convinced when Muntz shows up with a box full of Mexican confetti cannons. And were you wondering, did Muntz come back in a serape and sombrero from his trip to Mexico? See, you know he did.
What makes a confetti cannon Mexican, if I may ask?
That's where he bought it.
I see. Not the contents.
No.
Got it.
I don't know.
It's actually full of queso blanco and beans. I don't know.
So Claire is then present. Claire is present at a banquet also attended by Brandon and all the other honors grads. This is doubling as a send-off for the chancellor, and the students got together to get him a gift, which Claire presents. It's a boring leather briefcase, which would have been perfectly fine until someone sewed a very ugly condor patch on it. Not okay, guys. But
also,
the chance
in a college that's in a university that size, like, it's a university. They have 20 honors graduates.
Yeah. I don't know.
And one of them is Brandon.
Exactly. But anyway, the chancellor gets choked up at his crappy gift and tells everyone he'll never forget them. And Steve comes to pick up Claire. The chancellor, of course, asks if Samantha is coming to graduation, but apparently not. She's doing MAME in Toronto, which he pronounces with the second T real hard because he's not Canadian. The chancellor is disappointed and hurries off, whereupon Claire scolds Steve for bringing up his mother, which he didn't. The chancellor did. And then Brandon inserts himself to make this point. So now I'm on Claire's side. Sorry. I'm going to shorthand this, but Steve and Brandon go walking off through campus, remembering some of the scandalous stuff Steve did. Sarah, would you care to break in here and comment on the pants that they are each wearing?
You'll see this in our visual aids at previously.tv. Brandon is, as usual, wearing the landing chute from an entire lunar module, divided into 2 halves and flapping away. Meanwhile, Steve is wearing some of the tightest dungarees we have ever seen. And we have seen some tight jeans on this guy, but oh my God, like counting pores on the sack tight. Could you two just average each other, like average yourselves together and find a normal fucking pair of pants?
Yeah, please.
If I'm
spoiler,
if,
no.
If I may just turn back time for a moment?
Please.
Counting pores on the sack tight is what I heard. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. He does.
Correct.
How come we're not writing this stuff down? Like, some compendium of buntingisms here that's got to happen.
That's far from the first or even the half dozenth time that readers of my material have engaged with that particular horrifying mental image.
Mm.
Sorry about it. Yeah. Moose knuckles ahoy.
Indeed. So anyway, back to their conversation. If your buddy had ever been accused of rape, even falsely, which in this case is extremely debatable, and we did debate it at the time, ever bring it up again? Like, of course you wouldn't, but Brandon does. Like, and it's treated like just another goofy thing Steve did, like when he plagiarized Brandon's paper. Like, this whole conversation is, pants aside, very weird.
It is really weird, especially since later Rush makes a point of basically thanking Brandon for carrying Steve on his back through college. Like,
yeah,
why? Occasionally the writing used to make reference to this,
mm-hmm.
like when they went on Studs and met Celeste, and Steve was like, I'm tired of just being like the stupid ass foil to your, you know,
Golden
Captain
Boy.
America.
Yeah.
But it's like, why do you still even know each other? Like, if Brandon's such hot shit, he would have disassociated himself from Steve in, like, sophomore year, but whatever.
For sure. Yes. Anyway, I mean, how they stayed friends after the plagiarism thing, I'm sure I don't know, but whatever. Steve is leaving Brandon out of the senior prank planning for Brandon's sake. And at the good old Century City Plaza, Claire is shopping for a gift for her dad. Donna suggests a French dictionary, and Claire says he wrote one, which he's an economist. That's what his Nobel Prize is in. He did not write a French dictionary. What the hell, show?
Maybe it was a dictionary of French coins.
Maybe. David does get involved in the prank planning because it's his last chance to wild out at CU. No one cares. At a pre-grad party, Matt throws. Rush thanks Brandon and says he doesn't think Steve would have graduated without him, as Sarah said. Brandon claims Steve has been a good influence on him, too. They had fun. Rush wants to know why he hasn't heard about any senior pranks, and Steve doesn't give anything away. And then Rush grabs him by the face and gives him a huge kiss on the mouth, and I love it. I'm sorry, I made a gift to the visual aids.
Rush is still wearing that amazing opal pinky ring, too. I don't know.
Rush is the greatest. Anyway,
Rush.
Me too. When we get to Steve, David, and Munz setting shit up after dark, the show actually remembers that Steve was on guard duty when he is being punished for his plagiarism, so he knows the schedule for checks of the grounds by the security staff, which is impressive. I'm shocked they remembered something that happened that many episodes ago.
I'm shocked they remembered anything, but yeah.
No
sure.
kidding.
It's too bad that it was in the service of this complete Z of a plot, but oh well. Mm-hmm.
So then we get another reminder that these two are about to break up in clip two.
If your prank embarrasses my dad, I will kill you.
Claire. Don't worry. It's going to be a lot of fun.
You're such a baby. Why don't you grow up?
What is with you? It's either kisses or claws. I don't get it.
Oh, that's me. Take it or leave it.
Also, he's always been like this. You take it or leave it. Like,
yeah.
I'm so happy for this actor that she's finally getting off the show because this has been going in circles for a year and a half.
Yep. It's true. At the house later, Steve crows about his prank success before saying Claire is going to spend her last day with the Chancellor and that she thinks the Chancellor is fleeing the country because Samantha broke his heart. Val asks if Steve thinks Claire's having second thoughts about going to France, and Steve confidently says she wants to stay with him. Does she, though? Because over at the beach apartment, Claire cries to Donna about her dad feeling abandoned, which we have seen no evidence of, and worrying that she's going to make a mistake. So when Steve comes to pick her up for the Roaring Twenties party, which we will get to, she says she's not going to the party, and then announces without preamble, clip three.
I'm going to Paris. I don't want my dad to be alone.
I get the feeling this isn't about your dad, Claire.
I have to, okay?
You want to?
Yeah, I want to.
I cut it off, but he walks off for like 10 more minutes. Seriously. Yeah.
And then proceeds to be in the dumbest sulking on the beach outfit yet. But
yeah, in my notes, then he's sadly walking on the beach, ruining what is probably a rented suit because it's a costume for this 20s party.
Why can't go with her?
Yeah, I don't know. What is keeping him here? Nothing.
I assumed, because people have been talking about this on the forums for weeks now, because it's been so obvious that they're going to break up, finally.
Yeah.
But I thought he was invited. And he said no.
Yeah, no, apparently not.
Yeah, guess not. But I don't understand, like, he got no job, Rob. Like, just go ahead.
Well, unless that he's actually right, and her main thing is, like, I need to choose between you, and I choose my dad. Fuck off. In which case, like, okay.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, yeah. Okay.
Anyway.
Chancellor seems like a pretty fun guy. Sure. Why not?
Yeah. I mean, and the Chancellor likes Steve despite everything. Like, they seem to have a good relationship.
Yeah.
But if she's still holding a grudge against Samantha for breaking her dad's heart, quote unquote, then maybe that's why she's like, no, you can't be being a reminder, whatever. We're imagining stuff that was not actually on the show.
Yeah, it is not canon. And also, no one cares, which we're aware
of. No one cares.
Sorry to
waste
your time.
Speaking of no one cares, yes, we'll get to the payoff of the senior prank in our A-plot for now. Claire catches up to Steve to argue about which of them, Steve or her dad, needs her more. Steve says that even if the Chancellor does need her more, he doesn't care. Fair enough. Claire doesn't think Steve means that. And Steve says her father's her past. Steve is supposed to be her future. Claire says he can just come to Paris with her. Oh, no, he did. I just forgot. It was here in my notes.
Oh, okay. totally forgot that, too.
Claire says, this episode is long, you guys. Claire says he can come to Paris with her so they can figure out their future together. But Steve whines that his future is in L.A. So it's Steve's fault, really.
Okay.
Claire's not sure she belongs there. Steve won't be good at a long distance relationship. Claire knows. We all know. So this is it. He can't believe that after all they've been through, they're breaking up. And Claire says maybe they should just see what happens. But Steve knows it's not meant to be. And Claire is sorry and looks very pretty and tragic as she walks off crying. Poor Claire. We will miss you, Kathleen Robertson. But you ended up in a better place eventually.
It's true. And... we never saw her again. Probably.
Oh, boy.
She might show up at a wedding. Yeah, I'm not
sure.
And
I never saw him again.
Thanks, Grandma.
Thank you.
At the party, Steve tells Brandon about the breakup and that he knew what he had in Claire. Aw. And later, he's drowning his sorrows at the bar when Val comes over and asks if Claire's not coming. He drove Val to this party and their breakup, which had just happened, never came up. Okay. Thanks. Great TV writing. And when we next see Steve and Val, they're in the middle of making out on a couch somewhere and agreeing not to tell anyone about it. And I didn't notice this until I made a GIF of it this morning. But Austin is going around the party looking for Steve. He opens the door to whatever room they're in and he takes a huge like sniff of the air and then like makes a face and walks out. Ugh. And that's when the camera pans down to Steve and Val on the couch. And it is so gross.
Oh, I didn't notice that either.
Well, sorry, but you can see it in the visual aids because it happened. On to the B plot, Donna wavers in her virginity some more.
Oh.
Before we get to the real graduation, we have to watch Jackie and Mel and Kelly and David and poor Donna watch stupid Erin graduate from kindergarten. I also didn't notice until you put her in the visual aids that this is the third Erin. It's not even the same Erin from when Colin was around.
Nope. Erin 3, electric, booger picky. I don't know. Keep going. Just leave me here.
Speaking of electric, Donna's nipples are on full display and totally cattywampus, which you can also see in the visual aids. They are real wall-eyed this week. Totally not even aligned with each other. And apparently Donna has signaled a willingness maybe to move in with David because he's all horny for her and her wreck nipples as she heads off to pick up her grandma from the train station. And when we see them next, Donna is making her aged grandmother ride in her convertible with the top down. What old lady wants that? None, by the way. And I would really love to see like what they do with a car to make women's hair not blow everywhere. Because admittedly, this woman, I forget her name, the one from Lost in Space, is obviously like hairsprayed to Jesus. Like her hair is not moving one tiny bit, but neither is Donna's. And I was thinking this too while we were watching Smokey and the Bandit this weekend, which sidebar, you really see how many of Ian Ziering's comedic takes he has ripped off from Burt Reynolds when you watch Cannonball Run and Smokey and the Bandit back to back, because it's a lot.
Okay.
But Sally Field has her hair down in this convertible the whole time they're driving around, and like her, it's like sort of wispily blowing around. But if you've been in a convertible, it's like whipping you in the face. It's so unpleasant to ride in a convertible if your hair is longer than an inch.
Agree.
This has been convertible talk. Aaron Spelling makes us watch this elderly woman praise Donna for having so much character. Grandma wants to know what's up with David, and Donna says they're too young to be talking about marriage, but they're thinking about sharing an apartment. Grandma blahs about her own doomed marriage and how she and dead John both just knew, and when the time is right, Donna will too, and Donna hopes so. So when Donna manages to find Kelly in a brief moment of not being a bitch, to her anyway, she says she's been thinking about having sex after all. She wants to surprise David on graduation night. Kelly is supportive. And then shopping with Claire, Donna drags her into Victoria's Basics, I mean Secret. She shows Claire a white teddy and robe, and Claire's like, it's beautiful, but Steve likes black, which is pretty funny. I thought that actually made me laugh. Donna shows her one in black, and then they have this exchange, clip 4.
Makes a statement. Bold, naughty, easy to lose. Which one's nicer? Nicer or hotter? Nice isn't usually the operative word in lingerie. I mean more appropriate. Appropriate for what? Donna, is there something you're not telling me? Like what? Like why you're shopping for sexy lingerie when you sleep alone. Oh my God. Did you and Dave sleep together? No, not yet. But who knows? I don't know what to say. Well, don't say anything. David doesn't know. Just in case it happens, I want it to be perfect. In that case, we're buying both.
Barf.
Okay.
Barf.
Just get, oh my God, there's just so much stuff. With this.
Yeah, speaking of stuff, this is something else I didn't notice until I was doing the visual aids. So David shows up at the apartment when Donna's got her sex gear spread out all over the bed, like her lingerie, a box of condoms, the Victoria's Secret bag. And then in one corner is a pair of like low-heeled hiking shoes, which I assume are hers. But, like, why are they on the bed? I mean, I guess I respect that she's a virgin and she already knows what her kink is, but like they're totally incongruous and strange.
It's like in a Playgirl photo spread, obviously, yes. As we all know, not really. Sure. I looked at one once, uh-huh. But like these dudes, it's like a, you know, sexy hiking adventure, and they are wearing boots with right. socks and mm-hmm. backpacks with like that little front strap fastened.
Yeah.
Nothing else. Like just... dangling in the sun, but correct backpack application and broken in boots with wicking socks. A few. Probably getting a sunburn on your dongle, but not going to get a blister.
Oh my God. Amazing.
This is so much more interesting than this actual plot. I know.
Anyway, all she does is like pull the comforter over it, and then David comes in and they have a conversation. Who cares? Speaking of who cares, when we cut back to Grandma, she's telling Donna this is her time and she should enjoy it. Like, we get it. She's got the green light to fuck David. And after the beach apartment roommates have finished toasting each other and all the good times they had, Donna asks if she may have the apartment to herself the following night, and Claire and Kelly wait for her to leave the room before agreeing that Donna won't actually go through with it. And then it's the night. David isn't sure if he wants to go to this big roaring 20s party, which we will get to, but Donna insists, and he asks if it's okay if he has a couple of drinks tonight. And she says, of course, she might have a couple too. And this is, I assume, supposed to be a misdirect, like that Donna's going to get totally wasted again, like at the prom, but or nothing comes of it.
On the hurricanes in New Orleans.
Right. Maybe. Which nothing came of that either, other than they were huge. Like she didn't seem like she was drunk later. Anyway, drinks are the least of their worries because David arranges to talk to the Cardigans about doing some bullshit at the Peach Pit after dark, a conversation that will delay their departure from the party. So then she confesses to Kelly that she's not sure she still wants to do it. But then he arranges to talk to the band's manager the next day and just wants to go home and sleep. And Donna gets caught in a stuff storm that resolves to this clip 5.
I don't know what I want. David, do you love me?
Why are you asking?
Humor me, please.
Yes, Donna, I love you more than anything in the whole world. Can we go now?
Yep, now we can go.
That's the declaration of love that puts it over for him. He sounds exhausted and disgusted.
Yeah, but he always sounds like that. So I imagine she finds that comforting. She's ready to
perhaps.
She's ready to lace up her fucking boots and hit the trail.
Get to fucking.
Of fucking.
So in the car on the way home, David asks what's been up with Donna all day. And she babbles that it's nothing, but she has kind of a surprise for him when they get back. It's like a present, but it's not just for him. It's for her, too. He's like, with all due respect, I hope it's not a pet. And she says it's not, but she won't give him any hints. And when he asks if he's going to like it, she says now he's making her nervous. And there's more stuff, of course, when they get back to the apartment. Her surprise isn't ready yet. And when she says she needs time to prepare, he thinks it's food. He'd be okay if it was, since he didn't eat at the party. And she stuffs him into the kitchen where she goes to get, while she goes to get ready. He asks if the surprise is animal, vegetable, or mineral. And when she says animal and scurries off, he huffs that he knew it was a dog. Okay, I kind of laughed at that. I'm sorry.
So did I.
It's like, oh, I knew it was a dog. And apparently hours have passed before David is finally like, what is taking so long? And then lets himself into her room where she's lit like a menorah and is just lying there on the bed, apparently waiting for him to get so bored that he would let himself in. And this happens. Cliff six.
You like your surprise?
Yeah. Is it over?
That's what she it's said.
You sure?
More than I've ever been about anything. I mean, maybe if we had done this last year, or even last week, I might not have been. But I think this is the way it's supposed to be.
Why now? I mean, what made you change your mind?
Well, one part of my life ended today when we graduated. And now I want to spend the next part with you.
How'd I get so lucky?
You waited.
Oh, God. How'd he get so lucky? Sex with someone who has no idea what she's doing.
Yeah. And a boob cavern.
Anyway.
And is wearing like the Branson, Missouri line from Victoria's Secret.
Oh my God.
And
yes.
Then they make out seriously for 20 years. It takes forever. Like, oh,
well,
why?
It takes forever for it to fade out. But then they've kissed for like 4 seconds before she's like, I've got another present for you, and gets a condom off the nightstand. And I want him to be like, I'm not even hard yet, but they just say they love each other. And then they fuck, we assume. But the episode fades out on them. Still just kissing.
Oh, God.
Donna's virginity
luck,
is dead.
And yes,
long
Donna's
time. Donna's virginity.
We never saw it again.
And I never saw him again.
Finally, our last A plot of season 7. It's time to graduate, and Kelly is a bitch about it. So it seems like we join Val and Brandon, and Brandon's thumbs hooked in his pockets like Sarah loves so much. Moments after Val has finished telling him how she got swindled, and he's yelling at her about it like a real fucking asshole. Surprise. I mean, he's yelling at her because she tried to get in with Bill to fuck with Kelly, but still. So just as a reminder, for the second year in a row, we're heading into a season finale in which Val needs to track down some guy who blew town with all her money. Last year it was Colin, lest we forget. They still haven't caught Parker Lewis, but they think he may be in Europe. They need her to go look at photos. Like, why did Bill not confirm that Parker Lewis had worked for him? Or is the theory that Parker Lewis stole Derek Driscoll's identity? We don't know. Doesn't come up again. Val can't wait for Jim and Cindy to get there, which is when Brandon says they're not coming because their choices were 3 weeks in July or the weekend of their only son's college graduation. And they picked July. This is so out of character from Jim and Cindy. I'm sorry. Like, I'm sure this is just obviously a faked up reason to not have to pay these actors to come back on the show, but Jesus Christ.
Well, yeah. Is Sean Donnelly that expensive? Good Lord.
Honestly. I mean, none of us cares if Brandon graduates, but his parents supposedly love him and he's getting like the Star Student Award or whatever the fuck. Anyway, Brandon reminds Val that her own mom will be there, and she says it'll be the first time in a long time she'll be glad to see her. And Brandon goes straight from Val's room into a Kelly bitch cloud in clip 7.
Did you tell her?
No. No, I didn't tell her. I think she's sorry, and I think she's suffered enough.
And what makes that your decision?
Kel, it's graduation weekend. Can't we just let things ride?
Maybe you can, but I can't. I can't believe you're taking her side again. Brandon, do you want me to move in with you or not?
Yeah, you know I do.
Well, then Valerie has got to go. You have to tell her once and for all that she has to move out of this house.
And, of course, when it's muted, it's because Val is overhearing this whole conversation.
I mean, fuck you, Kelly. It's not your house.
Yeah. No, it's not.
Don't move in then. Just be like, these are the terms. You have a place to live. Who cares?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the point of it is, of all of this, is to make it seem like Brandon is really in a moral conundrum about what to do because he's torn between his duty to Val and wanting Kelly to continue fucking him. But like, it would have been so easy for them to have, well, whatever, they didn't, it doesn't matter. Kelly's being a bitch later at Aaron's kindergarten graduation, where we find out that her sister Joy is coming to convocation and that Bill enlisted Jackie to try to get Kelly not to be a bitch about it. Good fucking luck. And of course, the show can't afford to get Michelle Phillips back, so Abby just sends Val a graduation card apologizing for not coming, like maybe a phone call, but of course that couldn't happen because they couldn't even pay her to read the note she wrote in the card.
Yeah, she didn't send a check either. Boo.
No, she did not. I mean, it would have been Val's money anyway, I guess. Oh, wait. No, it wasn't. They sold the house.
Yeah, that's right.
Brandon is sad for Val. Val declares that she's going to tell Abby how she feels, and Brandon tries to brightside it by saying no one can take Val's graduation away from her, but Val reminds him that she's also unemployed, and he has no response to that. She kisses him on the cheek to thank him for being sweet and being there for her, and also so he won't kick her out, though she does not say that part. She does say she doesn't know what she'd do without him, and Brandon feels like a real piece of shit. Also being a bitch, David, when he comes into the office at the Peach Pit after dark while Val is packing up her stuff, he even knows she lost all her money and still doesn't care and is so mean in the scene. And Val, I mean, granted, she did try to make him fuck her friends so that she wouldn't blackmail her, but still, that was a long time ago, and you've done some shitty shit too, David.
Well, and she, anyway. And also in his defense, like, she is being so whiny and just like really whiny, really understanding how to get people to sympathize with her at all to a degree that's ridiculous, even for this inconsistent character. It's maddening.
Nah, that's true. That's true. Val then ill-advisedly tries to get David to intervene on her behalf with Kelly, and he immediately refuses. At the beach, Kelly opens the door to Bill and Joy and is a bitch about it, though less so to Joy, saying she'll call her. Though she doesn't invite either of them in, including when Bill gives her a giant bouquet of flowers that she glares at, which you can see in the visual aids.
You should be more grateful. Val then tries to get flowers, Kelly. They're hiding your gigantic belly.
Val then tries to get Nat to speak up for her with Kelly, but Nat says what we've been saying, which is that she should move on because it would be good for her. Extremely true. But Val can't and comes out to interrupt Kelly drinking Cokes with Joy to talk to her. Kelly says they were just leaving, but Val says it's important. And when they sit down, she says she wants Kelly to know how much it means to her to live at the Walsh house and how great it is to know it's her home and how much she appreciates it that Brandon lets her stay. Kelly's like, he said you could stay. And Val's like, he didn't say I couldn't. And Kelly says she's probably going to be moving in. Val surmises that means Kelly thinks the house isn't big enough for both of them. Kelly knows it isn't. Val thinks that's Brandon's decision, and Kelly says they're done. But Val has another card to play, she thinks, in clip 8.
I don't think it's going to be very pleasant if I have to call Jim and Cindy and tell them what's going on here. And what is that? They invited me to stay in that house. I don't think they're going to like that an old family friend is being put out on the streets because Brandon's current girlfriend can't get along. I see we've reached the veiled threat portion of the conversation. I'm not moving. Is that clear? Very.
Okay.
I mean, Kelly is a bitch, but I kind of admire that tone when she knows, like, she's going to win anyway. So And she is, as far as we know at this point.
If you can call that winning.
I guess. Out shopping, Kelly and Joy discuss some big and mysterious Roaring Twenties party and what Kelly's going to wear. Kelly's not sure she and Brandon are going to go, but Joy's like, you have to go, and finally spills that their dad is the one throwing it for Kelly as a graduation present. I think most grads would rather have the money, but sure. We also, based on what happens by the end of the episode, it's possible Bill is just putting this all on credit cards and hoping for the best. Anyway.
Or he stole it out of the evidence locker. Spoiler.
Yeah. Kelly says she doesn't want it. Joey says that Bill is trying to make up for the times he let Kelly down. And for once, Kelly is right and not being a bitch when she points out that this is manipulation and now she's the problem. Joy says it was supposed to be a surprise and she had promised not to tell Kelly. And then up roll Ryan and Austin. Ryan immediately starts hitting on Joy, who may have a visual impairment because as he leaves, she says he's cute. He is not. Before Nat's pre-grad party, Val turns her attention to Steve to make him say he likes having her as a roommate. And Steve agrees to talk to Brandon on her behalf. Val kisses him her thanks. So then Brandon comes to find Val. She's hopeful because she thinks Steve must have talked to him, and Brandon says he did, and that Steve's opinion has been duly noted, like a dick. Val assumes that means it's been ignored, and that Brandon looks as regretful as he can, as he does exactly what Kelly wanted him to in clip 9.
Val, you gotta help me out here. This just isn't gonna work. You gotta start looking for another place to live.
Why?
Because you and Kelly are going to kill each other. Or me.
And the problem is...
So who's going to look out for me? You know what? Maybe Jim and Cindy will.
I already talked to Jim and Cindy. They said it was my decision to make, and... my decision is you got to move out.
Brandon, please. Not now. Okay, after everything that's gone on.
Val, this doesn't mean we're gonna stop being friends.
Yeah, it does, Dick.
Friends. Including you. You've made that pretty obvious. Just let me stay through the summer.
I can't, Val. I can't.
That pause was like 5% too long.
The timing of all of this is so weird. Like, what would be the harm of letting her stay for a month?
Yeah.
But it, like, the way this is set up, like, once the decision is made, she's just supposed to move out that day.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Maybe a weekend? I don't know.
Yeah. That's not how it works. Like, she's got to find a place to live first. And even if you were like they could have so easily had it be, you know, he gives her a certain length of time. She keeps dragging her feet. But obviously this all has to happen over the course of a day. And when I say all this, oh God, we're getting to it. Mm-hmm. So Val excuses herself early from the Peach Pit party and Brandon feels like a shit. And once she's gone, Kelly gloats about her Val-free environment, not caring that Brandon is obviously still very conflicted about it. And after leaving a note on Brandon's pillow, Val checks in among the million glass bricks of the Shangri-La Hotel, which you can see in the visual aids, telling the desk guy she's checking out tomorrow. And when Val comes home alone, he finds Val's very melodramatic note in clip 10.
Dear Brandon, I truly hope you have a wonderful graduation day. I'm sorry I won't be there. While you're getting your diploma tomorrow morning, I'll be having my own private ceremony. I should have done this a year ago when I was with David. Better late than never, huh? All my love, Valerie.
Val. Is this the way? I mean, it works, but
yeah,
really. So then he goes into her room and finds all of her shit still in it, but her framed photos smashed on the floor. And Brandon picks up the phone and leaves David a message that's as chirpy as he can manage. And apparently Val wasn't lying. We cut straight from that to her on that bluff where she brought suicidal David last season. She's on her cell phone leaving a message telling Abby she's getting through her tough time and that Abby shouldn't worry about her. And the next morning, David returns Brandon's call, and we can barely appreciate that David is wearing clothes that fit him for once before Brandon gets right the fuck to it in clip 11.
David, listen, I got a note from Valerie, and it's kind of weird.
Oh, weird how?
Did she ever talk to you about killing herself?
Yeah, once.
When I was depressed, why?
Because in the letter it mentions that she should have done it a year ago when she was with David. Do you know what that means?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, did she ever tell you about wanting to kill herself? Oh, interesting. Hey, did she ever tell you if she knows how to play the clarinet? Like, what is that tone?
Oh my God.
So inappropriate.
I just... And the fact that they put this together and like figure out where she, I mean, whatever, it's fine, I guess.
Yeah.
It just takes forever. Anyways. Like, she is literally standing on that bluff to this day in another dimension. It is such a long scene.
Yeah. So thank you, Flashback, for eating up some time in this excessively long episode. David thinks that she must be on that bluff, and he even remembers the hotel she told him she stayed in. They both feel bad they were so hard on her the day before. Brandon's going to go find her, and we'll see David at convocation. David wants to come too, but Brandon says there's no point in both of them being late. Yeah, totally. Just one person is plenty to stop a suicidal person from going through with it. Why over?
I knew what
plan.
You were saying.
Anyway,
yeah.
I don't know. Thank you. Right on cue, Kelly comes in all a flutter about the dress she's going to wear under her gown. And for once, Brandon doesn't dime out Val to her, not even when Kelly is a bitch about it, which of course she is. And at convocation, Kelly looks around worriedly. Claire notes that she hasn't seen Val either. And does Kelly think there's a connection? Kelly is a bitch about it. And Claire just leaves because why get into it? David is also worried about their absence. Cut to Brandon in his car, calling the hotel to leave Val a message. All the various members of Kelly's family arrive at convocation and Kelly is a bitch about it. Jackie tells her not to let anyone ruin her day. And then it's time for everything to start. And Brandon still isn't even there, even though he's part of the ceremony. Brandon is, in fact, at this moment, pulling up at the Shangri-La, climbing out his fucking stupid car from the side like he loves to do, and then sliding along the sidewalk because Ian Ziering's not the only one who's bored, apparently. Brandon asks for Val, but the receptionist says she's no longer a guest there. He did give her all of Brandon's messages, though, and her response was that it was time for her to check out. And at CU, convocation budgetly begins, clip 12.
University to welcome you to the ranks of the working world. Good luck to you in 1988.
That's enough. Keep ducking out.
I mean, so. He's going to start doing it again.
Oh, he definitely is.
Two. Yeah. I mean, we also hear it like. I mean, what else is there to say? There's like maybe 150 people in the graduating class of a giant state university. The degrees are not conferred correctly or at all that I can see.
No. And let me just break in here to say, I'm sure I've said in past episodes, but my dad is a university registrar. And I, in addition to having been in a convocation when I graduated, I also used to work them, like, you know, handing out gowns and stuff to make a few bucks when I was in college. And none of this is how it goes. Like, even cut down for TV, this is preposterous. Starting with when we see everyone seated, all the students, David leans forward to ask Kelly if there's any sign of Brandon because, as it happens, Donna Martin, the fashion student, and David Silver, the presumably music student, are seated next to each other and behind Kelly Taylor, who's in a totally other department. None of that would happen. They would not be sitting anywhere close to each other. The seating was more realistic when they graduated from high school. Like, at a college grad, you don't just get to pick to sit with your friends. You sit in a specific order. So you get your diploma.
We actually did get to sit, most of us together, because they would group hold departments together and then they didn't really care.
Okay.
What they did. And then you all stood up together. Like, my degree was conferred on me in Latin, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Along with, they're just like, well, the following departments, please rise. And then the president drones this Latin that he or she doesn't understand. And then you move your tassel and then you sit back down. Like, it's pretty bullshit, actually, given that it's an Ivy League university. But We were hungover and it was hot and I really didn't care.
You don't actually like cross the stage and get handed your diploma and like be there to have your photo taken?
In a class of 1,300 people? Nope.
Well, at Brock, where I went, where my dad was the registrar, like they had more than one convocation. Like it was different departments on different days.
Oh, no. It's everybody, including like the honorary degrees and all of that.
Oh,
so
man.
Just they don't have time. Like in order for whoever to give a gassy speech about his, you know, honorary PhD.
Right.
Like you don't get to do that. My brother got to do that at NYU because that's how they do that.
Right.
At NYU.
All right. Fair enough. Anyway, so a lot of my complaints do not apply.
Well, okay. But at some point the degree is conferred.
Right.
Like, could we see that?
We'll get to it, or we won't, because it doesn't happen. Kelly is convinced that Val's going to make Brandon miss his convocation and is a bitch about it. The Chancellor's speech is very standard. I actually feel bad for Ryan and Austin for the first time ever, because they have been made to attend, and graduations are fucking boring. Like, even the people getting the degrees don't want to go. On the bluff over the PCH, Val gazes down at where she's about to splat, and then Brandon is right behind her trying to talk her out of jumping. And Val wants to know what happens after today. Brandon says they'll go home. She says, what about Kelly? And Brandon says she can let him deal with Kelly. It would be the first time ever, but okay. And somehow Val is convinced not only that she shouldn't kill herself, but that she should go straight from her suicide spot to convocation, the most boring event in any person's life. But Brandon starts walking up the aisle just in time for the Chancellor to call his name. My dad, frankly, would not stand for any of this bullshit, and neither would anyone in this registrar's office. I kind of want to make him watch this scene and record a special episode about what horseshit it is.
He would listen to that. That Sweet Lou Mini. I am into it.
I mean, he is going to be here in a couple of weeks, but he will be here before this episode drops. He's going to be here the same day. We'll see. I don't know if I can make him take a break from college football to watch this.
I wouldn't, nor would I put myself through it again if I were you.
No. So
I
Val
also,
also
note
take
that once yes. Val has been talked off the ledge, she is chirpy AF for the rest of the episode.
Yeah, I mean, like, the only thing that makes
want
me
some
think
tea.
Yeah, like I don't know why they bothered to show her on the bluff at night. Like, what happens is she goes to the bluff, then she goes back to the hotel and changes and comes back because she's not in the same outfit, and like. The only reason to show her on the bluff at night when there's probably no chance of anyone finding her is that she really was actually contemplating doing that. And this was not a whole manipulation solely, in which case her attitude afterwards is, you're right, totally bizarre. Like she just is acting like nothing happened.
Well, or at least show her scheming if that was the case.
Show her
because
in her
Kelly
hotel
sure
room,
like
having room service and like looking smug.
Like, watching Cartoon Network and being like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. Anyway, Val also takes her seat and Kelly is a bitch about it silently. Brandon is giving a symbolic diploma on behalf of the class of 97. He's about to get a real diploma I have in my notes, although maybe he's not. But Brandon takes the podium to make his very short and very stupid speech. And as soon as all the graduates have stood, move their tassels as directed by the Chancellor and the assembled bored loved ones have stood to applaud. Steve presses a button and all the confetti cannons go off. This is the prank. Not especially pranky or upsetting. Like, confetti at a grad? Sure. It's going to make a mess, but no one's going to be mad about it. Anyway, whatever. No one has crossed the stage, but maybe that doesn't happen at this school. Whatever. Back at the house after convocation. Brandon is refusing to tell Kelly where he was, and Kelly is a bitch about it for about 10 seconds, and then Brandon spills. Kelly, who just received a degree in psychology and is about to continue studying it in graduate school, or so we have been told.
At an Ivy League school.
Right. I mean, she decided not to go there, but supposedly got accepted to one, as if. She fully just scoffs at Brandon and his concern about his suicidal friend in clip 13.
No wonder she didn't want anyone to know. No one would believe that.
That's a little cold, don't you think?
Brandon, she loves herself way too much to do anything like that. Valerie is a drama queen, and you know it.
So even if she was faking it, it's still a cry for help.
Help which you're going to provide, I take it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, I am.
I'm sorry, Kel. I can't kick her out right now.
This is perfect. She won.
Don't turn this into a game.
Valerie turned this into a game. She said she would do anything to stay, and she did. I just didn't think you would make it this easy.
She's such a bitch.
You're such an asshole. Such an asshole.
Yeah.
I would like to note also that the Outstanding Student of the Graduating Class Award is what Brandon received.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where do they come up with these names? Best Guy of the Place Guy.
Montgomery Burns Award for Outstanding Achievement in the Field of Excellence.
Of excellence. Seriously. Also, it's fucking Brandon. Anyway, I just couldn't miss that one.
Thank you.
Opportunity.
Important
to shit
detail.
On Brandon.
Ugh, the worst.
Back to shitting on Kelly.
Yes.
Fuck you, Kelly.
So Val is in the girls' apartment while Claire dumps Steve when David comes around the corner, surprised to see her. He says he's glad she's there and doesn't say anything to the effect of, "You sure bounce back fast from your attempted suicide." He says he was worried. She didn't think he cared. And he says she makes it hard sometimes, but he does. She says it means a lot to her. So, okay. So then we see all the guests arriving at the Roaring Twenties party in their fancy period clothes. But we can also see in the background of the shot, a McDonald's. And you can see that in the visual aids. Ryan and Austin get blocked at the door by the bouncer, but Joy shows up just in time and gets them in. And at the bar, Val and Bill exchange greetings. He still hasn't heard anything from Parker Lewis. Why would he? Val says it seems like Parker Lewis stiffed Bill too, but Bill just laughs and takes a sip of champagne, neither confirming nor denying. When Brandon arrives, he and David discuss Val's mental health like the experts they obviously are in clip 14.
She gonna be okay?
Yeah, she's gonna be fine. Just, don't tell anyone about this, okay?
No, I wouldn't do that. Did a good thing, man.
Thanks. I'm paying for it now.
Well, that's what you get for going out with a coos.
Yeah. That's on you. And then Bill, terrible reader of rooms, makes Kelly come up on stage with him so he can announce her while she stands there side-eyeing him and being a bitch about it in clip 15.
This party is my graduation present to her, so Kelly, why don't you say a few words?
Hi. Have a good time.
Well, that's what a $100,000 education sounds like.
My daughter, the bitch, ladies and germs. Oh,
such a bitch. And then he.
And I love that he's just sort of like rolling his eyes, like, well, Kelly's gonna Kelly. What are you gonna do?
Seriously, though.
So good.
Then he introduces the Cardigans, who have barely eaten up any airtime when Bill follows Kelly onto the dance floor and she decides this is the perfect time and place to tell him not to act like they have a good relationship, and then makes Joy sit with her while she's a bitch about it some more. And Sarah got a great shot of Kelly looking askance and Joy being like, "You bitch." Anyway, Brandon eventually finds Kelly sitting alone and says her bad time tonight isn't because of Bill. It's because she's mad at Brandon, and Kelly admits that he's right. Brandon tells her to go spend some time with her dad before he leaves, and she goes bitchily. She finds Bill in the balcony. This is the shot that Sarah was talking about in the last podcast.
Even whiter than the last one. And she like turns to face him, and you could hear the creaking of the, bosun turning the Queen Mary.
Seriously.
I'm sorry. I know it's not her fault. And she was
It's not at all her fault. She's 12 months pregnant. Like, they could have written her out at this point, and they didn't. So
yeah,
they're doing what they can, but like, ey.
And we got to make our own fun.
We do. She basically challenges him to win her over, setting her jaw. He says she's very important to him. He just wants to be in her life again. He's proud of her and he loves her, and she doesn't say anything. And he can't believe that she just trusts him that much, but she defiantly says she does. And he's trying to overcome years of resentment. He just wants a chance. And he tries to push her by saying Joy and Jackie have let him in, but Kelly doesn't give a fuck. She's not impressed by his sudden conversion, and he hoarsely asks her not to shut him out. When he says someday she'll get married and raise a family and he doesn't want to miss that too, this touches a nerve. She orders him to stop because he doesn't know anything about her. So then Kelly comes back down to yell at Brandon that some things can't be fixed. He says he's not the enemy, but she says it feels like he is, since he's been siding with her enemies all day. Brandon gives up, saying if he's such a bad person, then she shouldn't move in with him. And Kelly finds Brent.
Don't.
Right. We, after a brief interlude to see what Steve's brothers are doing, which is being annoying near Joy this time, Kelly then finds Brandon drinking alone and asks if he's planning on leaving any time soon and is a bitch about it. He doesn't know. Does he mind if she just takes the limo? He doesn't care. She says she needs to leave, but she doesn't know where to go. He tells her to go home. She says she can't because there's a private party going on there, meaning her apartment. He states that she won't go to his house, and she agrees. Neither of them points out that someone with a $100,000 education whose dad just threw her this party probably can afford a hotel room. But anyway, she asks to join him and finally says she's sorry. She knows he's been trying to help her. She just can't get a handle on things. Her dad seems to be reaching out to her, but she slammed the door on him. And Brandon says this, clip 16.
You know, Kel, your father loves you. You gotta let him.
Does she though?
Like, no,
he sucks. I mean, I'm fine with him sucking because it makes her unhappy and she's horrible.
Sure.
But why? Does she? Because everybody else is getting beyond tired of her fucking bullshit. Like, there's no, I actually don't think she does need to do anything. Like, enjoy the party and go on about your life, not expecting anything from him, which you should have learned not to do, psych major.
Well, if I may make this personal, as the only person here who does have an estranged biological father, no, she doesn't need to do anything. And the argument of like, your sister loves me, like, I don't give a shit. Like, you have your relationship with her. That has nothing to do with me. And,
yeah, exactly.
You know, she has a mom. She has a stepdad. And even if she didn't, like, that doesn't require her to give Bill anything, frankly.
Yeah, like, I don't want to miss any of that. Like, well, you're not owed anything because you peaced out on everything. So fuck off. I mean, I love Sean Donnelly, but whatever. Like, if these were real people, I'd be like, you don't owe him shit, girl.
Yeah. The accident of her birth does not obligate her to anything. Like, it's your life. You have to set up boundaries that are going to be healthy for you. And if someone is constantly importuning you to give them more than you want, like that's not their prerogative to demand.
And don't let the cardigans tell you any different.
So then,
and that's one to grow on.
Thank you so much. So somehow what Brandon said, not knowing anything about anything, has worked. And Kelly rolls up on Bill as he's hugging Joy goodbye. Kelly apologizes for starting a fight before. If he's really ready to start over, she is too. And he's thrilled. But then clip 17.
Bill. It's time.
Yeah, I'll be right there.
So maybe we can have that dinner we missed, huh?
I'm afraid that's impossible.
Here we go again.
No, not this time. You see, these gentlemen are federal marshals. Tomorrow I'm being indicted by the grand jury on charges of fraud and embezzlement. After that, I go to jail.
What? Why?
Because I'm guilty. Tonight was part of the deal I made with the DA.
Jackie and Joy knew about this?
Yes, they did.
Why didn't you tell me?
Because you'd be a bitch about it.
Exactly what I have in my notes in all caps. The reason that I cut the clip off there. Yeah. When you thought he was just a businessman, you were a bitch about it. Like when you found out he was going to he was a criminal, it wasn't going to make you more kindly disposed toward him. Duh.
I would just like to note the line delivery of because I'm guilty.
Yeah, like, I know.
He's again sort of laughing at himself like, because I'm an asshole. I'm a felonious
shit. I wish we could go
break.
Back in time and make an old lady spinoff of like Rush and Bill Taylor being like, like glad handy pinky ring buddies. Because both of these characters are so out of place on this show, but so delightful to watch.
Or just like drop them. I mean, they were both soap vets, like they know what's up.
Yeah,
let's just drop them into basically a sitcom version of that, of the jail sequence from Goodfellas.
Yes,
so just one of them's slicing the garlic, and then the other one goes out to deliver salami, and
totally,
ooh, an aristocrat. I'd watch the hell
anyway.
Out of that.
So instead of saying that Kelly would have been a bitch about it, what he actually says is that he wanted her to forgive him before she knew the truth and thought even less of him. But she was right about one thing. He did try to buy her love this weekend. It's the only way he knew how. Sidebar. The deal he made with the DA was like the amount of money that he spent on this party was just like subtracted from whatever he would presumably owe to make his victims whole. Like, if he has access to this money, why isn't it being seized, all of it?
I don't know.
I don't either. Kelly is so sorry. Bill and Kelly hug, and then he has to go. Kelly tells Brandon she's glad she got the chance to make up before Bill had to go get arraigned. She just feels like everything's ending. He asks if she means them too, but she doesn't want that. And Brandon does this take, and I made a gif of it so that you can judge for yourself, where he like doesn't look, when she says she doesn't want to break up, he doesn't look happy or relieved or anything of the sort. He just looks like resigned, which is a very funny choice if it's an accidental commentary on their relationship. But he says he's glad to hear her say that, whatever his face may be telling her to the contrary. Steve and Val roll up after a moment. Steve's sorry about her dad, and Val is too. And after a significant look, capital S, capital L, Kelly coldly tells Val that she appreciates that. She thinks tonight is a good night for starting fresh. Val suggests a nightcap, but Kelly says that if they're all going to be living together, they should go home and get used to it. Brandon looks exhausted, and at the end of this season, me too. But that's it.
Me three. Put it in the books.
On to the next one. On to the next one. But first, let's do our episode MVP.
Sean Donnelly.
Yeah, fair. The Chancellor for going on to a better life in France.
Yeah.
Sounds romantic.
And escaping the song, the show with Claire.
I will miss him. I will miss him, both
me too.
Of them.
He's a very sweet actor and character.
Yes. Least valuable player. Kelly.
Yeah.
Such a bitch.
I mean, I guess you could make a case for Donna's Catholic education, but it's Kelly.
And since it's the finale, let's do our season MVP. Kelly again. She's just the worst. Really a rotten.
Wait, the
sorry. MVP.
MVP?
MMMM. Yes, I was thinking at least. Season MVP. Yes. Mark, who got out of it halfway through.
Yeah. Nat, we barely saw him.
It's true. Yeah, he had his baby. Everything worked out.
Yeah, the his peach babe managed wife. Not to go out of business for another year somehow.
True. Not even threatened. Yeah. Great. Least valuable player. Now it's Kelly.
Brandon.
Well, they deserve each other and they found their way back to each other's arms.
Ugh. Not that he can get his around her because he's tiny and she's massive, but hopefully things will have settled down somewhat by the time they started shooting season 8.
We
oh,
hope.
God.
And a user submitted challenge. Hot Tubbin' for Labor asks us to list 5 ways the show could be altered to adhere to CRTC regulations. Dave, you have some experience with this. Why don't you tell our American friends what that means?
CRTC regulations, a.k.a. CanCon, which is Canadian content, which is shows made in Canada, have to have a certain percentage of Canadian subject matter, Canadian talent working on the show.
Yes, CRTC is the Canadian Radio Telecommunications Commission. I think that's what it stands for. So basically 5 ways the show could comfortably rest on Canadian airwaves and, more importantly, as how it usually works, get Canadian funding to exist. I'll start. Much bigger roles for Claire and Jason and Brandon, since they are both played by Canadians.
Move shooting to Vancouver.
Jason Priestley directs every episode instead of just the crappiest ones.
Renamed the show Beverly Hills L2V3B8.
Oh yeah, it was going to be like M4T. Yeah. Have the confetti be teeny little maple leaf shapes?
Yes. I think it is red and white, so they're already most of the way there. Oh boy. Instead of just making a reference to Samantha's turn playing Mame in Toronto, we would have to spend half the season watching her do it a la Smash.
Or replace the golden arches in the background of that shot with a Tim Hortons.
Yep. Or a Harvey's burger. Any of those. Hey, sure. We did it.
We did do it. Next year on Again With This, we meet Carly and her non-dorable Moppet Zach, Noah and his single facial expression, the old who farted, a tiresome boatload of cohabitation stuff, and the mysterious Tiki that obliges Vincent Price to drown Brandon in the Hawaiian surf. Just kidding, alas, but believe this, a tarantula crawling on you in your tent is still less revolting than our visual aids, which you can find for this and every other episode of Again With This on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previously.tv, and you can follow this podcast at AWT90210. I am head alumna Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host Tara Ariano is what $100,000 education sounds like. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And of course, the outstanding producer of the graduating class, David T. Cole, is on Twitter at Glark. Stay sweet.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.